weekend, family, friends, players, and fans of the GMHL. Welcome to episode 4 of the Inside the GMHL podcast. My name is JR, and I'm your host. This week, we're going to be having a little bit of a longer episode because we are going to be dropping not one, but two different interviews this week. So I had the opportunity to head up to Quebec with the Rattlers team this weekend, and so I banked a couple of interviews this weekend. One, it will be our first player interview of the season. That'll be with Ville-Marie Pirates assistant captain and leading scorer Olivier Lamotte. And then I also had the chance to sit down with Temiscaming Titans GM and the most recent GM to win the Russell Cup, Francois Harrison. But before we get to the interviews, as always, I just wanted to take this time to thank you guys for continuing to listen, and I wanted to update you guys on a little bit of the actual GMHL information itself. And so standings-wise, in the North Division, we do have a change at the top of the division. So the Rattlers are finally in first place. They have a 16-1-1 record for 33 points. Ville-Marie drops down to second, just behind them, only a two-point difference. Temiscaming in third place, and then Meaford, who rattled off a trio of wins last week, now in fourth place at 10-6-0. West Nipissing 7-12-0, 14 points, tied with South Muskoka, also with 14. And Bancroft with 5 points at the bottom of the division, playing some tough games against both the South and the North Division there for Bancroft. South Division, no change at the top. We still have North York, 19-1-0, only one loss on the season. Bradford and Durham each added a couple more losses to their records, and so they are respectively second and third with 32 and 30 points. Then Tottenham with 27 points, 13-9-1 record on them. St. George still been playing well, 22 points on the season. Northumberland behind them. Niagara and Windsor. And then we finally have a win for the Streetsville Flyers this season. So they beat Windsor. I believe the score was 6-4, and they have their first win on the season. So the first 2 points for Streetsville. Congratulations to the Flyers. Hopefully more wins coming for you guys the rest of the season as you guys try and put together something to really show that you guys are committed to building a successful franchise moving forward. And in the West Division, obviously the top of the division is pretty much the chalk. High Prairie, 21-0, hasn't taken a loss this season, playing at an elite level out in the West Division. In fourth place, we still have that undefeated McKenzie team, only in fourth place because of the games played. Northern Alberta in second, 31 points. Edson, a couple wins back from them in third. Then Slave Lake with 15 points, and that kind of rounds out the top five in the division. Before we get down to Fox Creek, Kitimat, Burns Lake, and Gibbons. Burns Lake actually also got their first win of the season, and so now the only team left without a win is the 0-4 Tumbler Ridge Steel Kings. And so Tumbler Ridge, 0-4 to start the season, still going to be looking for some wins and some good matchups, possibly against Burns Lake and Kitimat. So that is the division standings for the season, and we are just about to get into some league news now. About a day after the last podcast was released, the GMHL released a feature on the website talking about the 50-point club, which at the time only had a few members. We now have 12 players who have scored 50 points so far on the season for the GMHL, including 4 players: Keegan Ferguson of the High Prairie Red Wings, Jordan Riviere of the Ville-Marie Pirates, Ethan Manybears of the High Prairie Red Wings, and Ryan Fritz of the North York Renegades, who are all at the 60-point mark. So Ferguson leading that bunch with 64, Riviere and Manybears with 61 each, and Ryan Fritz with 60 points. Behind them, the rest of the 50-point scorers are Terrell Schott, Dayton Shantz, Denis Golovachev, who was just recently traded from Tottenham to the Muskoka Shield, Michael Beaverbones, Ryan Hunter, Olivia Lamotte, Joseph Leonti, and Bryant Joseph. And then we also have 4 more players with 49 points who are one off of that 50-point season. And so a lot of elite offensive talent in the league so far this year on display. Which, keep a lookout on Ferguson, Riviere, Manybears, and Fritz, as they obviously are working towards the 100-point season in the GMHL here. I don't know if we've regularly had that many 100-point scorers all at the same time, and so this really could be a special season offensively in the league. The league also took the opportunity to spotlight a coach in the league, so the South Division Coach of the Year from 2022, that's Daryl Lloyd. He played in the OHL. He was drafted 90th overall by the Windsor Spitfires. He played there for 3 seasons, 200 games, 83 points with 44 goals. He also played another 26 games. After his junior career, he played in the CHL with the Loretto Bucks, then the Youngstown Steelhounds. Between 2006 and 2010, he played in the EC, sharing with Victoria Salmon Kings and the Kalamazoo Wings. Then he made the jump to the UK, where he signed to play in the EIHL for the Belfast Giants, and he went on to play for the Giants for 5 seasons, before returning to the ECHL, playing games with Wheeling and Wichita, before he did retire from playing professional hockey in 2016-2017. Overall, he played 347 games in the ECHL, scoring 188 points with 738 penalty minutes. In the EIHL, he played 234 games. With 136 points scored and 399 penalty minutes, and his numbers in the CHL were 134 games, 83 points, 343 penalty minutes. He also did play 5 games in the AHL, the American Hockey League. He had an assist and 6 penalty minutes. He had some championship success where he won 2 EIHL championships, one in 2011-2012 and one in 2013-14, before he started his coaching career in 2017 with the same North York Renegades franchise where he is now. So he started as an assistant coach, took over the team as head coach in 2018-19. He's been there ever since. He led the Renegades to 31 wins and 7 losses for 62 points and a division final where they went all the way to Game 7s to the eventual South Division champion Durham Roadrunners, and he won Coach of the Year for that. This season, the Renegades are off to one of their hottest starts in history. They are obviously now. They started off 13-1 at the time of writing, but now they're 19-1, adding another 6 wins since this article was released. And so it's awesome to see the league just taking the time to spotlight some of the coaching staff around the league. Daryl's also somebody that I'm looking to target to get on for an interview at the time of the showcase in December. The league also took the time to take another version of a spotlight since the last podcast, and that was the GMHL team profile spotlight, this time on the Northern Alberta Tomahawks. And so they joined the GMHL in 2019-2020 as the Enoch Tomahawks. Before they did rebrand as the Northern Alberta Tomahawks, they've consistently been one of the top programs in the West. They have a 5.86 winning percentage all time, and at the time of writing, they were 13-4-1. They have added a few more wins to that record, but they're still second in the West Division behind the powerhouse High Prairie Red Wings. The leading scorer this season is Terrell Schott. The all-time leading scorer is Bryant Joseph, who's also on the team this season. They've had a top defenseman. They've had an MVP, a top defensive forward. Their head coach and GM, Taylor McCallum, is obviously doing a fantastic job, as well as the captain, Brian Joseph, with alternate captain Steinhauer, Morin, Ward, and Strawberry. You know, the team is always involved in community events. The Enoch Cree Nation is the location of the Enoch Community Center, where the Northern Alberta Tomahawks play. Always a place that's willing to provide support to their junior franchises. And a couple of notable active alumni are Jamal Ekit, who also serves as the Tomahawks assistant coach, but he's playing in the Senior Hockey League. He had 3 points in 3 games for Bonnieville Senior Pontiacs. And then Keegan Okomo. So he started his GMHL career with the Tomahawks. He posted a 7-6-0 record. And then now he's playing in the BCIHL, where he's going to school and playing for the Okanagan Lakers. And so it's awesome that the GMHL is just taking the time right now to spotlight one of the many franchises out west. And lastly, before we get to the interviews, I did want to take this time to talk about something else that the GMHL put a spotlight on at this time, and that's the St. George Ravens. They're really getting involved in the community initiatives. They're taking donations from their fans from November 6th. To January 22nd, so that's right now. They're going to be collecting personal items, winter clothing, and non-perishable food items in partnership with the Rosewood House Emergency Shelter. So Rosewood is an organization that provides shelter services to the homeless people of Brantford and Brant County. They use a housing first model that aims to provide shelter services as well as developing programs to assist people in overcoming the root cause of their homelessness. So you can find out more information on Rosewood website. That's rosewoodhouse.on.ca. And they still have, I believe, 5 more home games. So the December 4th, December 11th, December 18th, January 8th, and January 22nd for you guys to make your way to the St. George Ravens home games and donate for Rosewood House. And so I'm going to keep the intro shorter than normal now. And so we are going to be heading over to one of our 2 interviews on this podcast. Please help me welcome the very first player interview of the season. This is Ville Marie Pirates assistant captain Olivier Lamotte. Next up on the podcast, we have our first player interview of the season, as we're joined by third-year GMHL forward and assistant captain Olivier Lamotte from the first-place Villemarie Pirates. Welcome to the podcast, Olivier.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
Good, and you?
Good, good. Now, to start off all the podcasts, whenever I have a guest on, I like to head back to a player's beginnings. And for you, that means your minor hockey career, spent between your local Abitibi-Temiskaming programs and the semi-local Rouyn-Noranda programs. What were your experiences like playing minor hockey through the Citadel's program?
Right, but the Citadel's is a very good program from Rouyn-Noranda. And I play with my friends, and after this, with the Citadel, I go from... I go to Amos with Michel Chapelet, and I play from August to December, and I don't like how I play at Michel Chapelet, so I went back to Rouyn. I play with the House of Rouyn-Noranda, and it's like Michel Double B, and I go play with my friends, and after I went to Collegial D1, and after I went there with the Pirates, with the Macaulay.
Heck yeah. And, would you say that once you went back, after you first went to Amos, when you went back, was when you truly developed a love for the game? You truly wanted to become better, and that's when you went back to put in the work to make yourself a better player moving forward?
Yeah, but my priority is very to play with my friends, and that's why I'm here at Villemarie. I got some very good friends here, and we have fun, and we win the game. And
Nothing wrong with playing with your friends. I mean, you guys are a very strong team. I mean, and part of that is obviously because you guys are so close. You have a lot of chemistry both in the room and on the ice, and it's clearly showed. Did you have a hand in helping to bring any of your friends here to Villemarie?
Yeah, but we got some rookies, and we got very, very good vets. So we got a good mix, and we're very one gang. So we move forward together.
Now, during your time playing minor, as you mentioned, you did play for the Foresters. Was the Foresters a team that helped you grow as a player, like once you got to that level and saw what it was?
Yeah, they helped me to see what is the real hockey and what step they want me to go up for the junior.
Yeah, exactly. Like the growth that you needed to make in order to make that next level. You got there, you got a taste of it, and you went, okay, so this is what real hockey is. This is the AAA hockey program. And, you know, you said, I need to get better. I'm going to go back and improve, and then I'll be ready to make an impact at a junior or a minor team.
I got fun for my place. And
heck yeah.
Yeah.
And what do you remember most fondly from your time when you were with the Foresters? Was there anything that somebody said to you or anything that you saw and said, oh, wow, that really makes an impact on me?
Yeah, there is no break. Yeah, you need to go to the gym. It's 7 days a week, so no stop, no break.
Putting in the work. Like a full-time job. Like you're in there, hockey is what you're doing, and you're expected to be committed to that every single day.
Yes.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, you did previously have Marc-Andre as a head coach before the Pirates, yes?
No, we play against.
Oh, you played against him?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, he was coaching here with Villemarie, and
because when I had talked to Marc-Andre, I know that he had talked about like kind of his recruiting and management style, and I wasn't sure if he had you as one of his players or if it was one of the players that he played against. When you played against Marc-Andre, what was that like? Did you go, oh man, that head coach over there, I don't know about that guy? Or were you like, okay, yeah, maybe that's somebody that I could see myself playing for one day?
Yeah, we know that he was a good coach. So after we were texting each other, and I knew he was on charge for the Pirates, so I would like to play with him.
Yeah, he's a pretty good guy, I'd say. I've gotten to know him over the last few years. I'd say, you know what, Marc-Andre, good guy. All right, coach, maybe? I don't know. He's got a championship, so.
Yeah.
And so since you came to Villemarie, how has it been to be a part of the community? Because the Pirates have one of the most supportive fan bases in the entire league, and it seems like the players are also a really big part of the community in all the events. I mean, how have you felt coming from where you came, Abitibi-Temiskaming, to Villemarie, and what that means to be a part of Villemarie in the community?
Yeah, they gave us some motivation to came here. We have some road to do, like 1 hour 30 from Tuesday, Thursday, and the weekend. So they gave us motivation to came here.
Yep.
And play. Yeah.
And going out into the rink like tonight and seeing, you know, 200, 300, 400 people, I mean, that's got to drive you, knowing that you guys have the support of the entire community behind you, it seems. Everybody whether it be a Friday or a Saturday night on the weekend, is here at a Pirates game. And they're, you know, they're here to watch Olivier Lamotte play. They're here to watch Jordan Briere play. They're here to watch maybe Marc-Andre Caron coach. Who knows?
Yeah.
But they're all here for the Pirates. And that's got to be a really good feeling.
Yeah.
Now, tonight you played a Bradford Rattlers team. You took a tough loss. What do you think about the Rattlers seeming to be the Pirates' main competition in the division so far?
They're a really good team.
Mm-hmm.
And if we not came here to play some good hockey, it's going to be like tonight.
And that's exactly what it's going to be. It's going to be both teams are going to have to come. They're going to have to bring their top competition against each other, because you know every single time you match up, it's going to be a tough game. I mean, personally, being around the Rattlers organization, I know that they think the same way about the Pirates, is that when they have a game against the Pirates, it's going to be the game. They're going to be putting in the focus into the Pirates, the same way I'm sure that you guys probably have been for a week getting ready for the Rattlers game as well.
Yeah, they got some skills players, so that's how we play here. We got some skills too, so
and
we
is
like
there,
this type of game.
Is there anything specific that Marc-Andre might institute throughout the week just to get you guys ready to play a team like Bradford, you know, one of the other top teams in the league?
Yeah, we need to get out the box, because they got some really the best part of the league, and they show it tonight again. So,
despite tonight's loss, the Pirates are still in first place. Extremely competitive North Division. You obviously are no small part in that. You have 52 points in 19 games. You're one of the leading scorers in the league. Is there a specific way that you go into every game for the Pirates, hoping to contribute to a win?
Yeah, but I got some really good teammates. They give me the puck. Sometimes I just need to put the puck in the net, and I give it to him. They give it to me. That's a dazzle.
A true teammate, always willing to be like, hey, you know, I have some good players around me, here's what it goes. Is there one thing that you try and focus on doing really well when you go on the ice? You go, if there's one thing I can control tonight, I want it to be this.
Yeah. But I like to pass the puck, so my teammates.
Setting up your teammates, putting them in good positions, making good breakout passes if you guys are in the defensive zone.
Yep.
Heck yeah. And lastly, what's the expectation you have for yourself and your teammates each day? And what are you doing to make sure that you're going to be competing for a championship at the end of the year?
Hey, it's take the game seriously. And to come here to play each game, like tonight in the Rattlers, if we came like tonight in the playoff, it's going to be rough.
Nope.
And,
you have to be there. You have to hold each other accountable. You got look at the person next to you and go, if you're not going to be here showing up to play, I mean, how can I count on you in the playoffs when it matters most, right?
Yeah.
Heck yeah. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me, Olivier. This has been awesome. And that was our very first player interview of this season with Villemarie Pirates assistant captain Olivier Lamotte, currently has 52 points in 19 games for the first place Villemarie Pirates. Thank you so much for coming on, and I hope you have a great rest of the night.
Thank you.
And I'd just like to take the time to thank Olivier Lamotte for sitting down with me following the game against Bradford. I mean, I know it can't always be easy to sit down with somebody following a game in which you weren't victorious, and so I truly do appreciate that from Olivier. And now I'm going to be kicking it over to our second interview of the podcast. Please help me welcome in the most recent Russell Cup winning GM, Temiskaming Titans GM, Francois Harrison. Next up on the podcast, we have Temiskaming Titans fourth-year general manager and the most recent GM to hoist the Russell Cup, Francois Harrison. How's it going today, Francois?
Well, I'm fine. Thanks for the invite. Very pleasant to be with you, Azure.
Definitely somebody I've wanted to have on the podcast for some time now. We've known each other for years through my time with the Civics and obviously your time with the Titans. And it's always a pleasure just to come up here or have you come down south and to get to chat with you about not only the team, but just about your personal experiences in life as well. So you're somebody that I enjoy talking to.
Thanks a lot.
And how's it going today and this weekend?
Well, actually, we're doing good. I would say that we face a little bit more challenges than we did in the last two seasons, because when you won back-to-back championships and a cup, and we didn't win the cup in 2020 because of COVID, but we were on the verge of playing the cup final. So when you got two strong seasons that way, you lose a lot of players, so you have to refuel a little bit your team. But we're still doing good. We third position actually in the North Division, which is a strong division.
Yep.
And we're coming up from a sequence of eight wins and three losses. Mm-hmm. So we're not bad. We're improving every week. The team that plays better.
Definitely some momentum there, especially when you know you have an 8-3 record in your last 11 games. I mean, it's something that you can go, okay, yeah, this is the team that maybe you foresaw when you put it together. And I know that there might be different pieces that might get added, but you know, to have an 8-3 record in the last 11 games, that's something for you to definitely go, this is a bright spot in the season. Let's continue to get this going.
Yeah, we have to. The plan this year was to try to refuel the team fast enough to be strong for the Canadian Championships, since we're hosting the event, so we're qualified already to play the Russell Cup. But in the same time, after winning back-to-back in the GMHL, losing 15 players aged 19 to 21 years old, mm-hmm. and losing 12 of our 13 best scorers.
Yeah.
Normally we should be down the standings, you know, but we have to be strong enough to have a real chance, a real shot at the cup in April. So it's kind of a beast where you try to rebuild, but in the same time be good enough to win. So plan was to improve along the season, and if you divide the season by four parts, since we're playing 42 games, so mm-hmm. mostly 10 games apart. We started with 4-4-1, mm-hmm. and then we switched to 8-3.
Nope.
So we're improving at least.
Yeah, heck yeah. Yeah, I mean, it already sounds like at least one of those four parts has been a success. So whenever I have somebody on the podcast, I do like to try and talk about the beginning of that person's career in hockey. And so in your own words, I mean, what did the beginning of your hockey career look like, you know, either from a playing side from when you were younger or, you know, just more management side? I mean, what was your journey throughout hockey?
Well, first of all, I was a goalie, a weak goalie, so I didn't have any future as a goalie. But as far as I remind, my first real contact with hockey was my parents had season tickets at the Quebec Remparts from mm-hmm. the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. At that time, I was 8 years old. And there was a guy by the name of Guy Lafleur who played over there.
Yeah, pretty good player.
Pretty good player. Yeah. So he was right away my best interest in hockey and my idol, and I follow him when he played in the NHL and everything. Gradually, I was in the media business and communication business, but mm-hmm. I've always been involved in hockey in some different mandates.
Yep.
And I find myself doing some scouting in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, I got president of what we call in Quebec the Collegial Hockey League, and then went on the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League as a hockey guy with the Baie-Comeau Drakkar.
Yep.
So I kind of climbed the world of hockey gradually. And I moved to the Témiscamingue region to do radio. I was the general manager of a radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out that there was a junior A hockey team in Témiscamingue. So I came watching games, and I become friends with Titans. And sometimes I would tell them or mention something about the game or what I saw, some reactions, something I would do, some help I could give them with bringing players in town. And one thing leads to another. I started scouting for them, and eventually Pascal Branch, the president of the team and sole owner, asked me if I would be interested by being a full-time GM with the team.
Mm-hmm.
So all the experiences on 30 years before being GM, I think that led me to the job of a GM. And I said yes. I signed a first 3 years contract with Titans.
Yep.
That was renewed last year, so,
yep.
So I'm under contract for three more seasons. And I just pinch myself. I'm so lucky. At 61 years old, I'm a full-time GM, having a living out of hockey, and being the general manager of a junior A hockey team. I'm a very lucky guy.
When you first moved to the Témiscamingue region and you found out about the Titans and the junior hockey team, was this something that you could have ever envisioned that you'd be doing at the time? Or did you know that you in some way, shape or form wanted to be involved with the team?
Getting involved, yes.
Yep.
If they were open to me. I mean, I was a newcomer in the region. I didn't have any roots in the region. So, I mean, it was very modestly that I thought that maybe I could help.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that I was capable of helping them at some capacities, you know. And eventually, it's funny because I was in what we call the Titans box is what we call the Bubba's corner.
Yeah, Bubba's corner.
Yeah, and all the owners at that time, there were more than once at that time. They were all standing in that Bubba's corner, and they invited me eventually because we became friends. And I was calling the shots sometimes 30 seconds before that happens. Oh my God! Oh no! Bang, go. So eventually they start asking, what is your real experience in hockey and blah, blah, blah. So I told them and I got involved that way and eventually as a full-time GM.
Now, since you did take over in GM, the teams, the Titans, are combined 82-18-2 in the regular season, winning percentage of .804, which is wild to have a winning percentage of over .800. This includes a Russell Cup victory for yourself in the only season that your team actually started and finished.
Yep.
And then another season having the playoffs canceled while you were obviously one game away from the finals. And then almost a full season obviously taken away from you in 2020, yep. 2021. How does it feel personally to have had such a large amount of success in such a more short amount of time in the league, just 4 years?
Well, I'm certainly proud of what the organization has done. Obviously, Coach Sebastian Lacroix has a lot to do with that. Mm-hmm. The GM part is managing the team and finding the players, mm-hmm. and then doing the scouting and the recruitment. But I mean, every season with Sebastian, you look at the team, and the team always improves gradually,
yep.
to be very top at the end. So he's an excellent coach. We've been lucky with our recruitment, and there's different things that I changed myself. If I could use the word in that sentence, mm-hmm. was some things that I changed myself is the way we draft, scout, organize tryouts. There were no tryouts in Temiscaming. Draft was not taken seriously. Now, if you look at our team since, we draft more than 20 players every season.
Yep.
We got four tryouts every season.
Regionally as well. I mean, you're not just in the Temiscaming region. You guys are doing tryouts, all over the place.
Yeah, center of Quebec, mm-hmm. South of Quebec. We're going mainly in Quebec. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, because that's a huge pound of hockey players that nobody's fishing in. So we go there. And if you look at our team, actually, the last two teams that we had, the last two lineups that we had, I would say that draft and tryouts combined were more or less at 75-80% of all of the players coming from one of them, either draft or either tryouts.
And that was a portion of the franchise that was almost completely ignored in the past.
Exactly.
I mean, whether it be the draft and not even having any of the tryouts. And now, like you said, I mean, having about 75% of your players coming through that, I mean, that's incredible accomplishment.
The advantage that gives us is the fact that we know the player very well. We mm-hmm. know when we sign a player, who is he, how he plays. We know the families because we've been involved in maybe a year before signing him. So we've seen him in a tryout. We drafted him. Sometimes we draft players that we hope that will come right away, but we also know that we draft players that will come in 2 years. Mm-hmm. So we, in advance, for next season, for example, I know that already four or five players drafted last year will come next year. So as a GM, it gives you a chance to look for players that will complete these ones that are coming instead of looking all over the place to just find players.
Yeah, scrambling to fill the roster. You guys can pick and choose exactly what parts of the roster need to be added to based on who you've drafted or who you have in advance. And another thing I've seen you do on social media really well in the Titans organization is you spotlight some of these younger players that aren't with the team yet.
Yep.
Players that you would consider to be future Titans,
yep.
whether they be playing in minor hockey, like maybe in the Trapper system or, somewhere in the Quebec collegiate system as well.
Yep.
I mean, you're not shy to, go, hey, this could be a future Titan here. And this is a player that we're really excited about, and we want to share the success that they're having somewhere else. And that's not something that I see a whole lot of other teams doing, and I think it's really good.
There's a lot of competition in hockey world. Mm-hmm. So the players drafted, we draft mostly players that we know that we have a fair chance to bring.
Mm-hmm.
There's some lucky moves that sometimes will work, but mostly I would say three-quarters of the players that we select, we know that we have a fair chance of bringing. But we have competition in other leagues.
Mm-hmm.
So we want a player feel that we're with him, we're watching him, we follow him,
mm-hmm.
and he's already part of our organization, despite the fact he hasn't signed his contract yet.
Yep.
So that's the way we do things. We try to do, you know, being around hockey for a while, I have not invented anything. It's just that I'm taking maybe some good moves that others have done at a different level and say, well, that would work, and let's put it in our program. So we try, modestly again, we try to act like a major junior hockey team in our planification, in our scouting, and the way we conduct our team with four practices a week, plus one skill practice, plus one dry land under supervision of an athletic coach, full access to gyms, spa. So we try to offer a real junior experience, pretty much like a major junior, but at junior level, of course.
The total package, to
that's
say.
It. No. The experience, the real thing.
And specifically from the player side of things, I mean, you've seen so many talented players come through the Titans franchise during your time specifically, from MVP winners to some of the league's top defensemen, goalie of the year candidates. What does your recruiting style look like and just how a player is going to be fitting in when they get to Temiskaming?
Like everybody else, looking for talent, of course. But I mean, the attitude, the right attitude, the character. And I'm looking for leaders. Guy that had the letters on their jerseys. Captains, assistant captain. And then, obviously, in our league, we could use 21 years old player that maybe were not in the league when they were 20. So we're trying to bring strong hockey players. But basically, skates, talent, skating, character. And with the insights that we got on certain players, the way they act in life generally.
Yeah.
We don't want to
Who they are.
Yeah, we don't want to bring a troublemaker. Right? That would happen. Sometimes we miss that one. This guy is, and we don't like him. But I mean, usually, again, we pretty know the player's profile. So when we look at bringing someone new, especially if he's a 21 years old player, he has to be right away a guy that will make a difference, either on defense or either on offense. That's what we do. Otherwise, if we look for 18, 17, 18, 19 years old player, we're looking on talent, skating, character. Mm-hmm. Those are things that are the first one we look at.
And obviously, the players that you are deciding to bring into Temiskaming, they do have certain qualities about them because a lot of them are moving on to play, you know, at different levels, you know, whether it be college or professionally. Is there anything specific that you are trying to do throughout the course of a season to either prepare a player to make that next jump or to help them with the connections to make the jump itself?
If the player is older, let's say he's 20 or 21 years old, when we recruit him and sign him, we want to know what his goal is.
Yep.
If he wants to go, let's say, have a try in the FPHL, or if he wants to go to Europe, semi-pro or pro, or if he wants to go to college, we want to know it. If we can help, we will. We have actually 67 players that have played in Temiskaming over the 10 first seasons that have signed somewhere as pro or minor pro. Semi-pro, and we have more than 1,000 players who turn on to be college players eventually in Canada, United States. So we want to know what the goal is. If the goal is just have a shot at winning a cup and he wants to do something else than hockey, fine, no problem. But if we can help, we will. When we sign a player, a younger player, we want to know what is his dream in terms of hockey. Obviously, things will make him change his point of view, change his goals eventually. But let's say the player wants to go to college in the United States. Well, obviously, we'll keep an eye on his school results, and we'll make contact eventually when he'll have 19 and 20 years old. So these are things that we were trying to do with our players. And it's a wheel that keeps on rolling, you know. The more successful you are, the more of your players are signed pros, semi-pros, or college. Well, that becomes a good advertisement for our team because the youngest player that comes at 17, 18, 19 said, well, I might have a shot of doing something else after my junior year if I go to Temiskaming. So,
and success is contagious, too, at that point. I mean, you see players see their teammates go on to, you know, play professionally or in college, and they go, you know, why can't that be me next? You know, a younger player sees a 21-year-old or a 20-year-old player make that jump and you know, have a successful advancement, and they go, well, why can't I do that? I mean, I could also go come in and, you know, put in the work for the next 2 or 3 years, and that could be me at that point.
And you know, something, Gerard, that the not too many teams will do, we have some players that commit themselves for 3 years and Timmy's coming, and they'll sign a contract. They signed a 3 years contract. Éloi Bouchard is a pretty good example of number one goalie. He went to play one season at age 18, and then we sat with Éloi and his father, and he wanted to commit for the whole junior season and plan to become a pro overseas in Europe at age 22. So all the plan we have with Éloi brings him, we hope, and we think we'll succeed, brings him to play in Europe. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what we did with William Godbout, our last season captain. He spent 3 years in Timiskaming. That was a 3 years contract. That's what the goal was, to play in Europe eventually. And he's playing in Sweden. So you're absolutely right. So you got guys like Emil Lavallée, who's a strong defenseman, great skaters, good shot. He sees William playing in Sweden. He's only 20 years old. So next year he's back with us. He's on a two seasons contract. But at age 22, he's probably the one that we will try to help to go into Europe.
Yeah.
So these things are very motivating for players, of course. Yeah.
Now, in the past couple of years, I mean, honestly, for as long as I've known the Titans franchise, it has been largely a French-based team with some extremely talented French players. But over the last couple of years specifically, you guys have had some extremely talented Russian players as well.
Yeah.
How did you originally start to develop your connection with players from Russia? And what's that looked like for you so far?
We had some Russian before my time in the team, but I mean, not maybe the high-profile type of player. It was a bit of a luck. Sometimes you have to be lucky. Mm-hmm. Hayden Moisner, who played with us in the 2019-2020 season, he ended up playing with Civics after the trade deadline. He knew a great, great hockey player in Russia, and that was Akhatnov. And so I talked to Akhatnov, thanks to Moisner, and then Akhatnov came in, and he was a good hockey player, and it makes some noise in Moscow around the fact that he was successful with us and blah, blah, blah. So I started receiving offers in Russia, trying to figure out who's a good person to deal with and who's not. And eventually, a trade that we made, again, we have a long-time
working relationship.
Yeah, when Stemke came in, Timiskaming at the trade deadline in 2019, Stemke went back with us last season, and all of a sudden he told me, I got a friend who could not play last year because of COVID. He was on the NHL draft list at one time at 18 years old, Ilya Baladin. Would you be interested? So I look at who was Baladin. I've talked to friends and scouts in Europe, and they all told me great things about Ilya. So we brought in Ilya. But that was, that again, sort of a luck.
Yep.
The first move was to bring Stemke, so we deserve a bit. But I mean, it was pure luck after that. Mm-hmm. So Baladin came in, Timiskaming, and then we heard a lot of rumors about the way we brought in Baladin in the league. Baladin just came because his great friend Stemke was in the team.
His buddy was here.
Yeah, he wanted to win a cup. No. Didn't play the year before. He went in, and it was a great success. So talking to different hockey players, and Civics, again, has a huge network in Russia. I have a tiny one. But it's all started with Akhatnov, and then Stemke, then Baladin, and it enlarged to a better network now.
And then now two more players from a more recent Civics trade, Verbetsky and Saibov.
Yeah, unfortunately, you were not in a situation to play this year. So, I mean, I was lucky enough to bring Daniel and Sava in the team. And we had two very, very strong Russian players that were supposed to play for us this season. But we all know the situation over there, so we can't have them with us.
Now, particularly, you did mention Stemke. He talks about his time in Timiskaming already, even just less than 1 year removed, as some of the best times of his life so far. He's recently been hired on as an agent.
Yeah.
And how does it feel to know that you've had that type of impact on a player, you know, that he remembers you so fondly? And then how valuable is it to have that connection with a former player who's now an agent?
A lot of gratitude and a lot of, I would say, pride to know that the players have this so great time here. And he's talking so warmly about the Titans. So it's great. And having him as an agent, of course, it will help us to maybe send players in Europe, but bring players in Temiscamingue too. I wish him a lot of luck. Rangel is always have a plan A, B, C, D, and I think he would eventually go to having a Z plan. I mean, he's very creative. I like this guy very much. He's smart, he's good humor, good hockey player.
Now, you took over in 2019, and were there any challenges that you experienced when you first took over in that offseason of 2019? I mean, I know that off podcast, we had chatted a little bit just about some of the things that you would face. Would you mind sharing?
Yeah, of course. I found myself in a situation where there was the United Nations in our dressing room, 12 different nations. I'm a firm believer that it's too many nations because you could have a lot of good individuals, but it's difficult to bring everybody as a team when you have to use a translator device to talk with the Japanese guy who could not speak to the Czech guy, and the Norwegian guy doesn't understand what the Swiss guy is saying.
Yeah.
So I made a lot of transactions, a lot of trades for picks. I sent players over in other teams. They were good hockey players.
Yep.
15 players the season before signed eventually pros or semi-pro. So they were all good players, but we didn't have any chemistry. We were kicked out by Lynx in the first round in the playoffs before I took over. So I said, I have to, you know, put on what I think is the right base for our team.
Allow for the cohesion of the team.
That's it. So I kept only three players.
Mm-hmm.
And we lost our coaches. One got married, and the other one has very young kids, so they were missing their father. So I had no coach, only three players by mid-April. So we started a first tryout, and eventually we signed LT Lapointe. That was my first player ever signed.
Good first signing.
Yep, and then eventually brought in Éloi Bouchard and coach Sébastien Lacroix, and we started building, and first thing we know, next February, we won the division.
Mm-hmm.
We won 1 point short of winning the league. And we were on the verge of eventually March 12th of going to the final when a strong thing called coronavirus at that time stopped us the day we were supposed to play game 5 and hopefully win to go to the final. So that was a challenge. And then the season after, like everybody else, the COVID thing was tough. We kept our players in Temiscamingue for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, we had no COVID cases at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had later, but we had 70 practices till December 13, when I got the information that Quebec was about to close everything on December 15. So we shut down everything. And we had no season at that time. And the next season was last year, where we were so successful. So I really enjoyed my job, but I told my friends, I just want to have a regular season, you know, playing regular season with 42 games, no COVID, and just, you know, see the team evolving the way you plan to see it evolve. So last year was not a full season, but it was as close as it could be a full season. And we did very well, and this year we have a full season.
I think everybody was sharing that sentiment at the time.
Of course.
Can we get back to what we had before?
Yeah.
And I think for a long time, people weren't sure exactly what that was going to look like coming back. But to know that we are back at this point and having a full season, I mean, it makes me as happy as I'm sure it makes you.
Of course. And last January, if you recall, everything got stopped in January because of COVID, and we all feared that that would never resume, you know. And now I could share, but I got players like Nathan Hardy or Éloi Bouchard or CPO who had firm contracts to go play in United States.
Yeah.
And they were talking, we were talking together, and they asked me if I thought that we would resume the season. I said, yes, but I can't promise. I mean, it's not in my hands, but I got the strong feeling that it will resume early February. But guys, I cannot promise you it will resume. But one thing I know, if you go to United States and we restart the season, you'll feel so bad about yourself because you know what kind of team we have.
100%.
Yeah. So they stick together and they decline their contracts offer. That was a stressful situation because Hardy was playing on first line, CPU was center on first line, and Bouchard was our goalie. Mm-hmm. So let's say these three guys went on playing in United States. Probably that the outcome at the end would have been someone else winning the cup. So that was a stressful situation. And it was my last contract season, but I didn't have any full season so far, you know? So,
you hadn't had a true chance to show, like, hey, this is exactly what the end result could be with the team that I get to put together.
And it's not just hockey. I mean, it's a business, too. I mean, the sponsorships, the ticket sales, and everything. So it turned out good.
I mean, I'd say so.
Yeah, I would say so, especially in playoffs. Playoffs were great. We had 13 games to win, and we end up winning all 13 games, scoring 84 goals, allowing 19. So that was a season that I would never probably be able to repeat as a GM. But thanks, because we were so sad about seeing our 2019-2020 season stop at one win short from going to the Cup. Thanks that we had that season last year and we won the Cup.
It allowed you a chance to redeem that season that got stolen away from you in a way.
I would never be capable of giving them back to the 11 players we lost. But the five that they were with us at that time, they won the Cup last year, I was so pleased with them.
And then yourself and Sebastian as well. And then speaking of Sebastian, I mean, he was one of the first moves that you made when you took over as GM. Was he somebody that you had earmarked for that role? Like, you knew that you wanted to bring in Coach Sebastian?
Nope. Coach Sebastian sent me his resume, as many other coaches, when I put on the different networks that I was looking for head coach. Mm-hmm. And we talked for a month before we could actually meet, because he was with a junior AAA team that won the championship that year, went to Fred Page tournament, so he was never available to come in Témiscamingue. So when we finally met the week after he went to the final of the Fred Page Cup, it's like we knew each other for a long time because we chat on a daily basis.
Felt like old friends at that point.
Yeah, we just wanted to have a seat together in the same room to see, do we connect in the presence of each other? Mm-hmm. Because we knew that hockey-wise, we saw hockey the same.
You were on the same page.
Yeah. So he signed a one-year contract. I told him, I got a 3 years contract myself. Do your first season. We'll see if we get along well, if you like it, if we like you. And if we do, you'll sign a 2 years contract. And by January, I already knew that he was the right guy. He enjoyed himself in Témiscamingue. He maintained an apartment 12 months a year in Témiscamingue, even though he's from Drummondville, Quebec, which is 1 hour southeast from Montreal. Mm-hmm. His wife is over there. Kids have grew up, so they're no longer living under the same roof. So he signed for 2 years. Last year, I told him, well, I should normally be renewed for 3 seasons. If I do, I will renew you for 3 seasons. And that happened to me in December. Pascal told me, François, you want to stick with us? Of course, I'm enjoying myself. So I signed for 3 years. And right before playoffs, we signed Sebastian for 3 years. It has been a situation where a coach never stuck around the team for more than a year before I took charge of the team. It was, even though team were doing good, always change coaches. Not anymore. I mean, it's the fourth season of Sebastian, and normally he would fill his whole contract, so he would do at least 6 seasons, as I do. We'll see in 2 years and a half where we're at. But I mean, actually, it's a lot more stable. Oh. And it's also a thing that I think Pascal appreciates. Pascal is a is the best man you could ever have on your side. If he says something, he will do it. Mm-hmm. And his team is doing good. He likes the way we manage his team, so he's glad that Sebastian wants to stick around. Mm-hmm. Apparently the same with me. So it's a very stable situation in Team Iskemi.
Well, both you and Sebastian both offer stability at the position at this point. I mean, having been here for 4 years and having another 2 years on your contract, I mean, that's something that, you know, not only the fans and Pascal, but also the players can rely on too. The players that you're bringing in and signing to the multi-year contracts, you had mentioned Bouchard and Godbout. I mean, like, these players are now able to rely on, oh, okay, yeah, my GM Francois is also going to be here. Yeah. My head coach Sebastian is also going to be here. Just
absolutely
a real stable environment.
Yeah, Massimo Doyle, Emile Lavallée are on a 2 years contract. So they know the next season, Sebastian is with the team, I'm with the team. Families appreciate that because they send over players. We only have one local player. So all the other players came from elsewhere in Canada, mostly Quebec, some from Europe. But the family knows that if they put their son in our team for two or three seasons, they will deal with the same coach, the same GM. So it's another comfort zone for the parents to knowing the people that would take care of their sons.
Now, I don't like to talk about anything negative, but this year, even though you're one of the top three teams in the division, like we mentioned, it's seems like it had taken you a little bit longer than normal to find your footing. I mean, you mentioned the 4-4-1 start. Do you think that type of adversity is something that both you and the players can use to improve moving forward? I mean, clearly it's already evident with the 8-3 in the last, or 8-3-1 in the last 11 games. Mm-hmm. I mean, but was going through that kind of tough stretch, do you think that might have been important for both you and the players at this point, getting ready to you know, make a run for the National?
You see, the way I see things in life, you control what you could control. Mm-hmm. What you don't control, you don't spend too much time on. Mm-hmm. If I could avoid adversity, I would.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not something pleasant. It's not something you want to do. Is that a positive thing? It could be a positive thing.
Yep.
It could be a negative thing too, because if you misjudge the character of some players, you might have some disillusion with some players.
Yeah.
But you could also see who's a leader, who's got great character. So we made some adjustment in the teams. If you watch what we did in the last month, and things are getting better now. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's tougher this year. We're nowhere near the point we were last season or the season before. But then again, one of my friends who's a GM in the Q, in Quebec Junior Major Hockey League, told me, Francois, how many players did you lose? Well, I lost 15 players, 19 to 21 years old. Yeah. See who won the Memorial Cup, St. John? Yeah. How many players did they lose? 14? Well, they're dead last in the league. You're third in your division. So, I mean, you're doing good.
100%.
So team is doing good, but we have a lot of work to do. And I count on the fact that, yes, what they have to face as adversity, reality, new reality for the 8 guys that won the Cup last year.
Oh, yeah.
That they could build on to become better players, but also that they will profit of that when eventually they'll go as an adult in their lives, seeing challengers are made to be overcome. And if you do that, you'll be a better person, you'll be better prepared for the adult life that you have in front of you. But to be honest, if I could avoid it, I would.
100%. Who wouldn't want to, you know, say, hey, no, I'd like it to go smoothly, please.
Yeah. Yeah, but sometimes I feel that I'm having 3 seasons of the same one, actually.
Well, those 8 players might actually be one of your most useful assets on the team. I mean, having been here last year and seeing all the success, I mean, they can take a look around and go, what can we do in order to help cultivate that success again this season?
Absolutely, and it's so important. The way you build a team, it's so important to have always someone who experienced success that stick with the team. Mm-hmm. Because they are the ones who will guide the youngest player. The 8 guys that we have in the team, all good hockey players, but also good leaders and good assets to the team, because otherwise they would be out of the team.
Yeah.
sometimes finding great players are not easy to do. But I mean, if a player disturbed the team to a point that he's, yes, he's a good hockey player, but I mean, he's pulling the team down.
Toxic.
No, that's it. No reason to keep him with us. Mm-hmm. So the eight guys that won the cup who are still with us are great guys to have around. And I see the leadership coming from these guys. And I really like them deeply. They're good young men, mm-hmm. actually.
And good people.
Yeah, you won't have that kind of players and that kind of a human being in your team.
Now, this year the Titans are hosting the first ever Canadian National Championship in the GMHL. How does it feel to not only have this honor, but also what are you and the city doing to prepare for the national championship?
Well, it's a chance in a way. It put a lot more pressure on our shoulders, of mm-hmm. course, because on this season where we should be rebuilding, we still have to have a team that has a real shot at winning the cup because we're hosting it and yep. we're qualified. So it's a strange beast, our reality, actually.
Very unique.
Yeah, you want to bring players that will be good for the next two seasons, but you have to win right away. So the long term doesn't speak the same language of the short term, mm-hmm. but they have to speak together.
Yeah, they have to find some way to communicate.
Yeah. City is excited about the fact that we host the mm-hmm. tournament. We will feel more excitement after Christmas time mm-hmm. because we'll be in the heart of winter. You came today, it's 9 degrees and the thing's coming, there's almost no snow.
Not something I was expecting at the end of November.
No, me neither. In January, we'll put on the gas and we'll make a lot more noise about the Canadian Championship. Mm-hmm. It's a great honor, first, to be the first one to host it. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be last year because it was Titan's 10th anniversary. Yep. That's why we were so strong. We were preparing a team to win all. So we won the cup, but we never had the Canadian Championship. So it's a great opportunity. It's cool for fans because they'll see four great teams for sure. You'll see the champions on every playoffs in the North Division, South Division, and West Division. That will be also something cool to see the West champion playing in this part of the country because we never mixed together.
We've never seen it.
No, so it's a great thing, really. And it was also some kind of an ace in our hands to bring a couple players into Temiskaming mm-hmm. this year because they have a shot at the camp. They're sure to have one.
100%.
So that's a nice way to end a junior career, maybe. Mm-hmm. So that's what's going on. We start hearing more about the championship, and you'll see the communication on the social media going up in January, February, building on the momentum to go to the national championship here in Temiskaming from the 30th of March to April 2nd.
Well, I can't wait to start seeing all that popping up because I know, I mean, being with one of the stronger teams in the league, we're obviously hoping to be competing here in Temiskaming. Mm-hmm. And once I start seeing that, I mean, it's only going to make me even more excited.
I don't want to hurt Pirates fans because they really have a shot too. They have a 100%. Great team. But you have a great team in the Rattlers this year. It's a very solid team.
Now, the Titans, in my opinion, are, speaking of solid team, I think that the Titans, just in my own experience, the top lead team in terms of community involvement. I mean, Remembrance Day ceremonies, past Christmas Day parades. Last night, you guys were involved with the telethon yeah. that raised $48,000 in a community of 3,000. I mean, how much of an importance do you put on making sure that the community feels like they're a part of the team?
That's a priority.
Yeah.
In a small market, you're the big thing. Eh? Mm-hmm. You're the big fish on a small pond. But you have to make players realize that they have a hockey team because we have a community. And a lot of kids look at our players like some kind of an idol, like I did
like
with
rock stars.
Yeah, these are players that some aim at becoming a Titans eventually. So you have to be accessible, and you have to be accessible as much as it doesn't interfere with our own team schedule,
yep.
with the community. So almost every time that we have a request, we try to find a way to say yes. We got two other events coming in the next 2 weeks where we're gonna get involved. And I think that players likes it because they see that the community is caring about them,
yep.
and there's someone in Temiskaming. And I think it's also a good way of teaching them others' reality. Mm-hmm. When you're looking to put food on your table and you're You're a single mom with three kids and not so much money, and players will deliver a package full of food, and you'll see the reality of these people and the smile that they bring on the mother. I mean, that's a valuable lesson.
And that's, you know, you're helping to make them, you know, for as much as they already might be great young men, you're only helping to reinstitute that even more. I mean, by allowing them these opportunities, these humbling opportunities, you know, to go, wow, like, they can really make a difference. I mean, you're setting them up in the future to maybe look at their own communities from wherever they're from and go, how can I make a difference here?
You know, you get experience from good and bad things in your life.
Mm-hmm.
We try to help them to put the effort to become a better hockey player, but give them some kind of advice and put them in a situation to grow up. And hopefully that helps.
Now, tonight, you play a Rattlers team that you're battling with at the top of the division.
Yeah.
You're third. The Rattlers are still second right now. How do you prepare your team to go up against one of the other top teams in the league? I mean, you know the games are going to be played at a high level. You know both teams are going to be coming out strong, hoping to compete for that win as they do on every given night. But do you think that the competition makes it that much higher when you're playing one of the other top teams?
First of all, we like to play the Rattlers because we like to play good hockey.
Yeah.
Good hockey teams. And there is this rivalry over the years between the Rattlers and us because we were top teams every season. The game we played in Rattlers, we shot ourselves in the foot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we lost 7-5 after leading 2-0, 3-1, 5-2. But all goals were scored in a power play situation, except the last one was a penalty shot, but we were in PK at that time. So that was our fault. We help a team that doesn't need to be helped to beat us. Tonight, unfortunately, we're missing 7 players and 4 21-year-old guys. So, I mean, miracles happen, but by definition, they are miracles. So we'll try our best. We'll put on the effort for sure.
100%.
Probably a special strategy. But even Sebastian, as head coach, is suspended, actually. So we don't have Éloi Bouchard. We don't have Mongrain. We lost the full second line of Stegman, Lavoie, Fanfan. Falardeau is injured. Tessier Gagnon is out of the lineup. Man, it's a lot of power and a lot of firepower.
It takes a lot just to say all the names that are out of the lineup tonight.
So honestly, I think we have a better chance next Friday when you come back because our lineup will be almost full. But tonight we'll do our best. So that's what I could say, and we'll do our best.
Well, and I think just because this podcast will be coming out before next Friday's game, I think when a lot of people hear this throughout the week that we are currently in when it releases, I think a lot of eyes are going to be on next Friday's game.
Yep.
Once you guys have
a full
lineup and we're coming back at that point too.
I mean,
the only game that we have in between now and then will be tomorrow's game against West Nipissing.
Mm-hmm.
And then all eyes will be focused on what's about to happen Friday night in Tuscany.
And that's our next game on our side too. So next game, Bouchard is back, Mongrain is back, the full second line is back. And we will announce on Monday that we bring an all-star player from Europe, a great hockey player that I'm talking to for 3 years, and who just signed his contract, and he's coming on Monday. So we'll have a better opposition to offer to Rattlers, and we'll be more in a situation to evaluate. But really, on my side, I think Rattlers has a very good team because they're good skaters, they're strong on the puck, they got two great lines, a terrific power play, good on defense. I mean, it's very much a team to consider to meet eventually at the Canadian Championship. It would, in my point of view, it would be either Pirates or Rattlers, but I mean, I like the Rattlers very much.
And the last thing you said, or one of the things that you had said there, was you're going to be joined by a new player, an all-star from Europe, and that actually leads into my last question. So lastly, what are your expectations for the team moving forward as we reach the halfway point of the season? And you haven't been shy to make trade deadline splashes with trades or signings in the past. You've already made some key moves this season, you know, bringing in Stegman, bringing in Falardeau. Is there anything that we can expect in the next little bit. You just kind of mentioned, you know, you're obviously going to be making an announcement on Monday.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you think you have in the works that could be coming to fruition?
We have to be competitive.
Yeah.
So we'll do whatever it takes to, in my position, to help the team and bring a team that has a real chance of winning the cup. That doesn't mean that we think that we'll be the best team, but we have to be. When we will be finding ourselves in the Canadian Championship, we have to be a team that could win. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to change the whole team, especially that the guy who's coming on Thursday is already my 32nd player. So we still have 8 cards to fill, but no more than 8 cards. But most definitely, you'll see some movements, of course. I'm curious to see. I don't think we'll see too many trades this year in the league.
I think it'll be a little bit different, especially given the new overage rules and the restrictions there. I think that's going to limit kind of the buying and selling aspect of like the trade market.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with you on that part.
And the other thing you have to check for, to make sure that you're in a good situation, you have to have the commitment of 20 years old from this year to come back next year if you want to maximize your card of 21 years old player, because we remember the rule. You're allowed only 5 new 21 years old. So you have to make sure that you got 20s that are coming back next year. Lavallee is one of them.
Yep.
So we have to make sure that there's a second one. So the work is different this year. You're limited to 7 21 years old player, and you have to be sure that 220s are coming back next season. So for all these reasons, I think we'll see less trades. Civics are not playing, Spartans are not playing.
Mm-hmm.
So you got 2 players less to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably more players that will come from other leagues, which is a little bit more of a challenge, of course. But I mean, yes, well, we'll try to improve the team for sure.
I've no doubt that you're going to be doing your due diligence on any player that you hear is available, or, you know, any player that you hear might not be happy in the current situation. I have no doubt that you're going to be, you know, saying, okay, what can we do to see if this is a person that fits with the Titans?
And especially that we could offer the run for the cup.
Yep.
Added player. You know, in November we bring Stegman, Falardo, Gazi now on defense, will play his second game tonight, and this guy who's coming in on Monday. So it's 4 players already in November. So the trade deadline ends on January 12th. So we have a little bit less than 2 months to work with. So we'll see on January 13 how it will look. Rattlers have the possibility of adding 21 years old players themselves. And I'm sure Sean will do whatever it takes to improve again his team, because he's got a real chance to the cup. And we'll see what Paris does. They got a couple of 20 years old cards available, so there will be some action, I'm sure.
That was all the questions that I had for today. Was there anything else you wanted to add before we wrap up on the podcast?
I just want to say thanks and congrats for bringing that show on the internet. I think it's a great job. I like the fact that we communicate more in the league this year.
Yep.
A lot more. That's very very cool to see that the league is going to offer more content on the web, post, your show.
That's been a real focus of mine ever since, you know, obviously, like you had mentioned, the Civics aren't playing this year, and I got the opportunity through the Rattlers in the league, is I wanted to make sure that we were doing what we can to maximize the exposure for everybody in the league. Because if the league itself, you know, is doing more, then I think that's going to encourage all the teams to do more, too. So.
I guess, yes. No. And it's always a good way of getting the attention of players and families to consider playing in JMHL next season. If you don't hear anything about something, it's like the food. Huh? If you never tried the, let's say, food from Cambodia, you don't like the food from Cambodia because you have no idea that
you don't know,
food
you don't know about it.
That's it. So this is the same thing with our league. So good to see that we're doing more.
Well, I appreciate you coming on to the podcast. Thank you so much, Francois, and
thanks
good luck tonight.
Me. Thank you. We need luck tonight.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, buddy.
Wow, what an interview that was with Francois. Anytime I have the chance to sit down, I really do relish that opportunity. He's got great hockey mind, and Temiskaming's lucky to have somebody like him, you know, at the helm of their franchise now, especially with the multi-year contract that he had mentioned that he has. And I just wanted to take the time to also thank Francois for sitting down to chat with me before our game on Saturday night in Temiskaming. And that is going to wrap up everything here on episode 4 of the Inside the GMHL podcast. I appreciate everyone's feedback. I also appreciate you taking the time to listen, whether it be on your commute or during a warm-up or whenever you might be listening. I really do appreciate you guys taking the time to do that. And yes, we are going to be back in a couple of weeks, and I believe the next coverage that we're going to be having will be at the GMHL Showcase in Niagara. So everybody have a great one, and thanks for listening.